From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. Tonight, Governor Mitt Romney will deliver the biggest speech of his political career, accepting the Republican Party's 2012 presidential nomination. It is his moment to better introduce himself to the American people and make his case for election in November. If the last two nights of the convention have been about the message, tonight is about the man, a chance for Mitt Romney to tell the country more about himself as a person and why he is uniquely qualified to be President of the United States. Of course, before he speaks, we'll see a parade of other GOP luminaries making that case. And watching the spectacle from Tampa, we have NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving and national political correspondent Mara Liasson, as well as E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution. Welcome to you all.
Nice to be here.
And here with me in Washington is Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon. Welcome again.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ron Elving, to set us off here, what does Mitt Romney need to accomplish tonight?
He needs to get himself back out in front of this convention. I think that his name has been mentioned a lot, and we've seen a glimpse of him coming out to greet his wife on Tuesday night. But right now, the dominant impression of personalities from the convention would not be Mitt Romney. It would be Paul Ryan, or perhaps it would be Ann Romney, or perhaps it would be Chris Christie. Tonight, we're having a lot of emphasis on the Hispanics in the party, and we're meeting a lot of them on stage. Mitt Romney has not been a heartfelt, sentimental favorite of the Republican Party up to now. He wasn't that in 2008. He wasn't that in the primaries. So tonight is the night he really needs to, if you will, win the hearts of the Republican Party, both in this hall and around the country.
Mara Liasson, this has been difficult for him, right? Kind of showing his personal side?
Well, he hasn't liked to do that. He's reticent about doing that. I think the big question for Mitt Romney tonight is, does he think his job is to be merely an acceptable alternative to Barack Obama, or does he have to do something more? Does he have to pick up where Paul Ryan left off? Paul Ryan made a very ideological speech, really laid out his vision of a much smaller government, where government benefits kind of were stultifying to American initiative and ingenuity. Does Romney pick that up? We do have some excerpts from the Romney speech. He certainly is talking about President Obama more in sorrow than in anger. He says, "I wish President Obama had succeeded, but his promises gave way to disappointment and division." He says, we know that many Americans were excited about Obama 4 years ago, but he says, you know, there's something wrong with the kind of job he's done as president when the best feeling you had was the day you voted for him. So he'll make his own case. He'll talk about Bain Capital. He'll talk about the Olympics and being the governor of Massachusetts. He'll talk about his time as a bishop in the Mormon Church. But he will also take the attack to the president.
Okay, and I think we're going to head down to the floor there now. Brian Naylor is with the New Hampshire delegation. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you tonight?
Good. Nice to talk with you again.
Good to talk to you. Yeah, I'm down in New Hampshire. It's right in front of the stage, appropriate for its prominent role in Mitt Romney's political career. It's, of course, where he has a home on Lake Winnipesaukee, and it gave him his first primary victory. And it's a toss-up state this year, and I think both sides hope that they President Obama won it 4 years ago. The Romney campaign hopes it can win this time around, and I'm with Scott Hilliard, who's the Merrimack County Sheriff and is a Mitt Romney delegate. And how does the Romney campaign win New Hampshire this time around?
I think the Romney campaign wins New Hampshire very easily, not taking that the wrong way. But Mitt Romney has been there. People of New Hampshire believe in retail politics. Mitt Romney understands that. He's been there. He's pressed the flesh with the people, and we are there working for him. This contingent that you see behind you is here because not only do they believe in Mitt Romney, but they believe he is the person to carry our message across this country and for everybody. And we are very confident that the people of New Hampshire, especially in the last 3 or 4 days since this convention, are hearing the message that's resonating across the country, which is we believe in the message. We are there for people.
All right. And I wanted to also ask you, we also have another delegate here from New Hampshire, Paul Mirsky. Now, Mr. Mirsky, you're a delegate that has been... Mr. Mirsky, you're a delegate that's been committed to Ron Paul. Is there still going to be a bit of a division amongst the Paul supporters in New Hampshire, which is a notoriously independent-leaning state?
I think that if the Republican National Committee appeals to those votes and gives that constituency the sense that it will promote grassroots activism as it has in the past, if it corrects the recent rule rule that's been adopted by the party.
I'm gonna have to cut you off here, Mr. Mirsky. We need to hear from former Florida Governor Jeb Bush on the podium now.
I have something personal I'd like to share with you. I've been so blessed to be part of a family that has committed its life to public service. My grandfather and my father have been incredible role models for me and served our country honorably. And my brother, well, I love my brother. He is a man of integrity, courage, and honor. And during incredibly challenging times, he kept us safe. So, Mr. President, it is time to stop blaming your predecessor for your failed economic policies. You were dealt a tough hand. You were dealt a tough hand, but your policies have not worked. In the fourth year of your presidency, a real leader would accept responsibility for his actions, and you haven't done it. Now that I've got it off my chest, let's talk a little bit about our kids and education. This election is about the future of this nation. We can shape that future with what we do here, with what we do on November 6th. We can restore America's greatness. That starts with a strong economy, a smart energy policy, lower deficits, and a president who puts America's workers and job creators first. But to have a great future, a secure future, a future that is equal to our potential as a nation, we need to do something else. We must make sure that our children and grandchildren are ready for the world we are shaping today. It starts in our homes, in our communities, and especially in our schools. As a candidate and governor, I visited over 400 Florida schools. I saw children read for their first sentences, solve their first long division problems, explore the miracles of chemistry and physics. That's the essence of education, students getting a chance at a future. There are many reasons to believe America's future is bright, but also reasons to worry. Of 34 advanced nations in the world, American students rank 17th in science, 25th in math. Only one quarter of high school graduates are ready for their next steps. China and India produce 8 times more engineering students each year than the United States. This is a moral cost to our country. Our failing schools need to be fixed. We say that every child in America has an equal opportunity. But tell that to a kid in whose classroom learning isn't respected. Tell that to a parent stuck in a school where there is no leadership. Tell that to a young, talented teacher who just got laid off because she didn't have tenure. The sad truth is that equality of opportunity doesn't exist in many of our schools. We give some kids a chance, but not all. That failure is the great moral and economic issue of our time, and it is hurting all of America. I believe we can meet this challenge. We need to set high standards for students and teachers and provide students and their parents the choices they deserve. The first step is a simple one. We must stop prejudging children based on their race, ethnicity, or household income. We must stop excusing failure in our schools and start rewarding improvement and success. We must have high academic standards that are benchmarked to the best in the world. You see, all kids can learn. Governor Romney believes it, and the data proves it. While he was governor, Massachusetts raised standards, and today their students lead the nation in academic performance. Here in Florida in 1999, we were at the bottom of the nation in education. For the last decade, this state has been on a path of reform. Under the leadership of Governor Rick Scott and local leaders, our focus every day is whether students are learning. That's it. Today, more students are reading on grade level, passing rigorous college prep courses, and graduating from high school. And perhaps most exciting, those traditionally left behind are showing the greatest gains. Among African-American students, Florida is ranked fourth in the nation for academic improvement. Among low-income students, we're ranked third for our gains. Among students with disabilities, we're ranked first. And among Latino students, the gains were so big, they require a new metric. Right now, Florida's fourth grade Hispanic students read as well or better than the average of all students in 21 states and the District of Columbia. These kids were once written off. But today, thanks to teachers like Sean Duffy, we're changing that.
I'm honored to be an educator, to help the next generation of leaders, thinkers, builders, and entrepreneurs. Sadly, I'm part of a dwindling field. I've seen too many good teachers come and go, mainly due to poor working conditions and little pay. Bad teachers get locked into the system, and good teachers leave for more money. On top of the bureaucratic challenges, what we're teaching doesn't always match what our students actually need. To that end, I helped launch a STEM lab at my high school. These labs focus on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and help students learn proficiency in these fields. We turn students away from education each year by not providing a robust curriculum that helps keeps up with the world in which these students live and will eventually work. And at the end of the day, all of what we do, from the educators to the policymakers, has to be student-focused and student-centered.
All right, and we are going to break away there. We've been hearing from a teacher, Sean Duffy, talking about his work. And before that, Governor Jeb Bush, the former governor of Florida, and of course the former son and brother of former presidents George H.W. and George W. Bush. We're now going down to the floor in Tampa, and NPR's Jeff Brady is joining us now. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, I'm standing in the California delegation, and just a few minutes ago when we saw a video coming up, we could see signs going up that said, Hispanics for Matt, for Mitt, not for Matt, for Mitt. Mitt Romney is the candidate here. And we've been thinking about the issue of immigration. I'm standing here with Luis Alvarado. He's from Pico Rivera, California. That's an L.A. suburb. And you and I were talking just a few minutes ago. It sounds like there's a tone being set at this convention on the issue of immigration.
Well, absolutely. When you saw that video right now with all these Latino Republican elected officials who are serving with great distinction are actually creating a message that this Republican Party is not anti-Latino. It's not the boogeyman. It's truly refreshing to see that there is a great investment within the party, within this candidacy, to ensure that Latinos feel respected, feel that they're part of the process, and that they're stakeholders in the future that we're trying to fight for as Republicans.
And how do you see that being expressed? We saw the video that you just mentioned a few minutes ago where it listed all of those first, the people who were elected into office and all members of the Republican Party. How else do you see that being expressed at this convention?
Well, the speakers, not just the video, every speaker that I've seen throughout these days have had a measure of softness, of ensuring that America knows that although there is a hard job to do, that we can still do it without compromising our principles, without not understanding, with understanding that people are human beings and their feelings, and that especially within the Latino community, that, you know, we invite them. We invite them to be part of the process. You know, from Condoleezza Rice on down to Susana Martinez.
The governor of New Mexico.
Governor of New Mexico. Even Ann Romney talked about the sensibility that Mitt brings to this race. And that correlates also to us as Latinos as being focused in understanding that the job has to be done, but it's still we can do it with compassion. And we can do it with understanding that it's going to be a hard process, and we're going to be in it together.
And I guess in some way you have to say that the party needs to embrace a lot of people to grow. The population is changing in the U.S.
The demographics are certainly changing, as it has been since the beginning of the nation. You know, first we had the Irish American, we have Native Americans, Italian Americans. You know, we have Latinos. And even within Latinos, we're not monolithic. We're not all from the same country. You know, there's Latinos and or Hispanics from all sides of the world. You can be African American, Oriental, and still be Hispanic. You know, and we all have different needs, and it's very difficult. I sense from the Obama administration and the Democratic campaigning is that they like to peg us as a monolithic or a group that we all think and we all act, and therefore we should all vote together. And that's not true. It's time for the Latino community to be free of that gender, of the genre of us being in the pocket of Democrats. And it's time to think for ourselves and take leadership of our individualness and to vote the way we feel and more aligned with the Republican Party.
That's Luis Alvarado. He's a delegate and political consultant from Pico Rivera, California. Thanks so much for chatting with us. And back up to you.
Okay, thanks. And here's Jeff Brady. Matt Continetti, the speaker there just made a point that we've heard so many people talking about how there should be a broader, more compassionate immigration policy, but that's kind of at odds with where Mitt Romney has been on this issue.
It's interesting, and of course, a lot of this talk about immigration and immigrant stories, almost every single speaker we've heard has mentioned their connection to the immigrant experience in America. The video that was played highlighting the Hispanic Republicans. This is meant to address a serious issue for Romney, which is this gap in the Latino vote. And, you know, he's not pulling even a third of it, which is about what John McCain got in 2008. George W. Bush in 2004 got much more. So this is something they're going to have to address if they want to win with, you know, besides just overwhelming majorities of white voters.
And yet it was Romney seen as having the hardline stance against immigration, illegal immigration, during the primaries. And we'll get to that and more issues coming up. This is live special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News.
Support for NPR's election coverage comes from America's Natural Gas Alliance, representing the natural gas industry and supporting nearly 3 million jobs across the country, ANGA.US. From the Principal Financial Group, managing investments and working to help build dreams for more than 130 years, the Principal at dreamagain.com. And from Nissan, featuring the redesigned Nissan Altima with 38 miles per gallon highway. Nissan, innovation that excites. This is NPR.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. This last night of the convention is all about the nominee. We're building to the moment when former Governor Mitt Romney will accept his party's nomination. So far this evening, we've been hearing a lot about immigration, and Matt Continente was just making the point of the big gap in Hispanic support that the GOP faces. E.J. Dionne, a lot of the speakers we've been hearing from are calling for a compassionate immigration policy, but Mitt Romney was the hardliner during the primaries. I guess there's a lot of divisions in the party.
Well, I think Mitt Romney moved to the right on immigration because he needed to find an issue to get to the right of Governor Rick Perry on. And so immigration was it, because Rick Perry is from Texas and has a more open attitude. And so now they're trying to change the impression without really changing the policy. I want to go back to last March when Eric Fernstrom, the Romney aide, got into trouble for saying after the primaries, everything changes. It's almost like an etch-a-sketch. You can kind of shake it up and restart all over again. I really think tonight is etch-a-sketch night. You're seeing it on the appeal for Latinos, and I think you're going to see a change in tone on Romney's part toward the middle of the electorate. I ran into Andy Kohut, the great nonpartisan pollster, earlier this evening. He said that Romney really has three imperatives tonight. When you look at the polls, he's down on all these attributes. He's got to look more likable, more credible, and more empathetic. And I think those are going to be more of a focus of his speech than any of the issues we've heard about, any of the issues we heard about last night from Paul Ryan.
Ron Elving.
That's all true, except at the same time, the people in this hall and the people that the Republican Party is counting on for its base vote in November are still suspicious of Mitt Romney's commitment to the kind of movement conservatism that's represented by Paul Ryan or Ronald Reagan or Jack Kemp or many of the other people who have been lionized by all these videos that we've seen here at the convention. So there is a contradictory set of demands.
But you know what, Ron? I think the first 3 days of the or 2 days of the shortened convention were largely dedicated to the base. Paul Ryan pick was dedicated to the base. If he has to run a base-oriented campaign all the way to November, I don't think he can win the election, and I have a feeling the Romney apparatus knows that.
Matt Continente.
Well, I think Ron, EJ, you're both right. I'll be the great compromiser in the tradition
Bill Clinton,
of my favorite Whig, Henry Clay. No, he's got to close some gaps, and he has to expand others. He has to close the Latino gap. He's not going to win the Latino vote. He just needs to narrow that gap, and I think that's why you see this new message on immigration, or at least this new sympathy toward immigrants.
Well, from other people, not yet from Mr. Romney.
Yeah, I think you'll see it from Romney. And also, I've been picking up a lot of talk about education. What is that about? Well, that's about the gender gap, which is also very large and pronounced. I think by stressing education, Condi Rice talked about the biggest civil rights issue of our age last night. I think that's meant to, again, he's not going to win women, I think, but he just needs to narrow the gap. On the other hand, he needs to expand two gaps that are working to his advantage, and that's among independent voters. A Democracy Corps poll came out just today with Romney with about a 15-16-point lead among independents. He needs to get up, I think, to 18-20 points to be assured election. And so he also has to address that cohort that all of this convention is about, in my opinion, which are the disillusioned Obama voters, many of them independents, many of them white suburbanites who voted for Obama in 08. They are feeling remorse. Romney needs them to pull the lever for him in November.
And I think Matt's right about the focus there. And if you look at the excerpts that they've already made public from his convention speech, so much of it is directed to the person who voted for Obama. One line we're going to hear: if you felt that excitement when you voted for Barack Obama, shouldn't you feel that excitement now that he's President Obama? It's sort of more a in sadness than anger kind of tone. Republicans haven't been very good at anything but anger for a lot of this year. He's trying to move somewhere else.
Ron Elving, I just want to circle back around to this issue of immigration for a moment, though, because Matt pointed out Mr. Romney a few years ago during the Bush administration was talking about how it might be reasonable to offer some illegal immigrants to vet them in some way and allow some to apply to stay in this country. And then he hardened during the primaries. Now, if he's supposed to soften again for a general campaign to go after independents, won't that pose its own problem? If he tries to follow the line of all the other people on this podium here.
It would seem to pose a problem if you're concerned about consistency. And many of us who follow these kinds of issues obsessively are concerned about consistency. Many Americans are. But at the same time, the people who are the late deciders, who haven't necessarily committed to one candidate or another at this point, are not all that concerned about consistency because they're just tuning in. Mitt Romney, as BJ was suggesting a moment ago, can largely reinvent himself in the next couple of months on this issue, much as he did last winter when, as you described, he moved away from his previous position of being more accepting of immigration and took the hard line against Newt Gingrich, the hard line against Rick Perry, who had gotten to his left on the immigration issue.
But he's on record as being against the DREAM Act. The Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach was involved in writing the platform. He's been an informal advisor to Mitt Romney, and he's just recently brought suit against the federal government over the Obama administration's new rule to allow some young people who were brought here as children to apply to stay in this country. And the lawsuit says that puts immigration officials in a very awkward position of not enforcing the law. And this is a man who's been advising Romney. And Romney has called the controversial immigration law there a model. So once he's in office, he has all this record. People will be expecting him to maybe take some hardline immigration policies, no?
You are absolutely right. You are very well informed on this issue, and you are insisting again on consistency. You're expecting him to do what he said he would do when he was running in the primaries. He's going to be a different candidate this fall. He's probably not going to talk about that platform very much at all. And if he does get elected in November, the candidate will then become the president, who in January and February and March could be yet a third person again.
But you know what, Ron, I agree with that. But I also think that Latino voters will not forget where he's been. And he will get clobbered among Latino voters. The question is, does he get clobbered by so much that it endangers his chances of carrying a whole bunch of states? And so this is a game they're playing at the margins with Latinos, just trying to cut their losses a little bit. And that's why there's been all this emphasis on Republicans who happen to be Hispanic.
All right. Gentlemen, we're going to go back to the podium there in Tampa, Washington State Representative Kathy McMorris Rodgers. She's the only woman among Republican leadership in Congress. And here she is.
Evening of the 2012 Republican Convention. We've had a few wonderful days hearing the inspiring stories of Republicans from across the country, from some of our party's great leaders like Governor Jeb Bush, who we just heard from, to everyday men and women working hard to survive in the Obama economy. They've told us how we can do better. They've reminded us that we built it. And we've learned about how under Romney-Ryan administration, we can change it. Of course, tonight is the main event. Tonight, we will hear from the next president of the United States, Mitt Romney. And we have chosen him because we believe in America. We believe in an America that doesn't punish success, but celebrates it. An America that encourages hard work and personal responsibility. And we believe in an America where every child has a chance to succeed. Tonight, we'll hear from some of the people who know Mitt Romney best. In their words and from their stories, we will learn why he is the right man to defeat Barack Obama this November and restore America to greatness. We'll hear from dear family friends whose lives have been touched by the Romney's faith and generosity. We'll hear from two former colleagues who worked alongside Mitt when he was governor of Massachusetts. You'll hear from the CEO of Staples, a successful company that Mitt Romney helped create and expand during his time at Bain Capital. We're delighted to have a number of former Olympians with us tonight to remind us of the great comeback that Mitt Romney engineered at the Salt Lake City Olympics. And we are excited that Florida Senator Marco Rubio is here to share his personal story and vision for a future where everyone can still capture the American dream. To get the next portion of the evening started, I'd like to welcome to the stage Grant Bennett, president of CPS Technologies and friend of Mitt Romney.
Okay, and Grant Bennett is among several people who are Mormons, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I have been blessed to spend thousands of hours over many years with a dear friend and remarkable man named Mitt Romney. These wonderful, even glorious hours together were spent in serving our fellow men and women. They were spent in service in our church. We embraced Christ's admonition, "Inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me." The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, of which we are members, has an unpaid lay clergy. While raising his family and pursuing his career, Mitt Romney served in our church, devoting 10, 15, and even 20 hours a week doing so. Like all Mormon leaders, he did so on his own time and at his own expense. I was Mitt's assistant when he was our pastor. I had a front row seat, and it was marvelous to behold. As we began working together, Mitt asked, "How early can I call you in the morning?" I answered, 6 a.m. I regret my answer. Mitt Romney became my alarm clock. A typical morning call: "Grant, it's Mitt. I'm at the airport. Hazel Young tripped last night and bruised her hip. Please visit her this evening. Give her my love. I'll arrange for meals, and I will visit her on my way home from the airport tomorrow." In our early morning calls, Mitt didn't discuss questions of theology. He found the definition of religion given by James in the New Testament to be a practical guide. "Pure religion is to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction." So, what specifically did Mitt Romney do as our pastor? For one or two evenings each week, and several hours every weekend, week after week, and year after year, he met with those seeking help with the burdens of real life, burdens we all face at one time or another. Unemployment, sickness, financial distress, loneliness. Mitt prayed and counseled with church members seeking spiritual direction, single mothers raising children, couples with marital problems, youth with addictions, immigrants separated from their families, and individuals whose heat had been shut off. to uphold the dignity and respect the privacy of those who came. He met with them in private and in confidence. He has upheld that trust.
And we're listening to Grant Bennett, a friend of Mitt Romney's, talking about his work in the Mormon Church.
Mitt's response to those who came was compassion in all its beautiful varieties. He had a listening ear and a helping hand. Drawing on the skills and resources of those in our congregation, Mitt provided food and housing, rides to the doctor, and companions to sit with those who were ill. He shoveled snow and raked leaves for the elderly. He took down tables and swept floors at church dinners. He was often the last to leave. Years later, I became the pastor. Only then did I understand the dedication this calling requires and the clarity this service provides into the full range of our shared human experience. Mitt challenged each of us to find our life by losing it in service to others. He issued that challenge again and again. The church itself was a marvelous vehicle for extending that challenge. Mitt seldom delivered the sermon himself. He gave that opportunity to fellow church members. He sought to involve everyone so everyone could grow. Mitt taught faith in God, personal integrity, self-reliance, and service to our fellow men. And Mitt did what he challenged us to do. He led by example. I treasure every minute we serve together. I am grateful.
And we've been listening to Grant Bennett talk about Mitt Romney's service as a pastor in the Mormon Church, how Mitt Romney spent hours every week helping those in need, delivering food, housing, rides to the doctor. There is more to come. You're listening to special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News.
Support for NPR's election coverage comes from CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. From America's Natural Gas Alliance, supplying domestic energy while working to protect the environment. Learn more at anga.us. And from the Principal Financial Group, managing investments and working to help build dreams for more than 130 years. The Principal at dreamagain.com. This is NPR.
We'll be right back.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden. We're going back to the podium in Tampa, where Ted and Pat Oborowski, friends of Mitt Romney, are talking about Mitt Romney's help to them when their son, David, was sick with cancer.
In 1979, a tragedy struck our family when our youngest son, David, was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease, it was a cancer.
Over a period of 7 months, he was in and out of Children's Hospital in Boston for treatment. Throughout that agonizing period, Mitt took time from his busy schedule to visit David. They developed a loving friendship. On one of his visits, Mitt discovered that David was very fond of fireworks. He went out and bought a box full of big-time fireworks that had to sit on the closet shelf because they couldn't be set off in the city. We waited until we were able to go to Ogunquit, Maine, where we set them off on the sand dunes with permission from the fire and police departments. Through that simple but thoughtful gift, Mitt brought joy to a young boy who had not experienced any for too long. He also gave the rest of us a welcome release. On another visit, David, knowing Mitt had gone to law school at Harvard, asked Mitt if he would help him write a will. He had some prized possessions he wanted to make sure were given to his closest friends and family. The next time Mitt went to the hospital, he was equipped with his yellow legal pad and pen. Together, they made David's will. That is a task that no child should ever have to do. But it gave David peace of mind. So, after David's death, we were able to give his skateboard, his model rockets, and his fishing gear to his best friends. He also made it clear that his brother Peter should get his Ruger 22 rifle. How many men do you know would take the time out of their busy lives to visit a terminally ill 14-year-old and help him settle his affairs? David also helped us plan his funeral. He wanted to be buried in his Boy Scout uniform. He wanted Mitt to pronounce his eulogy, and Mitt was there to honor that request. We will be ever grateful to Mitt for his love and concern.
We humbly wish that God will continue to bless Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan in their efforts. In doing so, he will bless the United States of America.
In 1982, my husband Grant and I moved from California to Massachusetts with our newborn son. Being a church-going family...
And now we're hearing from Pat Finlayson, Pam Finlayson, another friend and fellow Mormon of Mitt Romney.
Named Mitt Romney. I knew Mitt was special from the start. At the time, we didn't know own a dryer, and the day he stopped by to welcome us, I was embarrassed to have laundry hanging all over the house. But Mitt wasn't fazed. In fact, as we spoke, without a word, he joined me and actually started helpfully plucking clothes from around the house and folding them. By the time Mitt left, not only did I feel welcome, my laundry was done. As Grant and I juggled school, jobs, church, and family, we grew to love the Romneys. They became role models and friends, and we were honored when Mitt and Ann regularly trusted us to stay with their 5 rambunctious but very loving sons when they traveled. It was when our daughter Kate was born 3.5 months early, however, that I fully came to appreciate what a great treasure of friendship we had in Mitt and Ann. Kate was so tiny and very sick. Her lungs not yet ready to breathe, her heart unstable, and after suffering a severe brain hemorrhage at 3 days old, she was teetering on the very edge of life. As I sat with her in intensive care, consumed with a mother's worry and fear, dear Mitt came to visit and pray with me. As our clergy, he was one of very few visitors allowed. And I will never forget how, when he looked down tenderly at my daughter, his eyes filled with tears, and he reached out and gently stroked her tiny back. I could tell immediately that he didn't just see a tangle of plastic and tubes and wires. He saw our beautiful little girl, and he was clearly overcome with compassion for her. During the many months that our Kate was hospitalized, the Romneys often cared for our 2-year-old son, Peter. They treated him like one of their own, like a sick son. They gave him a nickname and even welcomed him to stay the night when needed. When Thanksgiving rolled around, Kate was still struggling for life. Brain surgery was scheduled, and the holiday was the furthest thing from our minds. But that morning, I opened my door to find Mitt and his boys, arms loaded down with a Thanksgiving feast. Of course, we were overcome. When I called to thank Ann later, she sweetly confessed it had been Mitt's idea, that most of the shopping and cooking and chopping had been done by him. She and the boys had just happily pitched in. Eventually, we moved from Boston. Our daughter, Kate, grew into an amazing girl of faith and love. But complications of her birth remained with her. And after 26 years of both miracles and struggle, she passed away just 1.5 years ago. In the midst of making the final decision to run for president, which had to be the most difficult of their lives, when they heard of Kate's passing, both Mitt and Ann paused to personally reach out to us and extend us sympathy and express their love. It seems to me, when it comes to loving our neighbor, we can talk about it or we can live it. The Romneys live it every single day. When the world looks at Mitt Romney, they may see him as the founder of a successful business, the leader of the Olympic Games, or a governor. But when I see Mitt Romney, I know him to be a loving father, a man of faith, and a caring and compassionate friend. It is with great excitement and renewed hope that I think of how our country will be blessed as it is led by a man who is not only so very accomplished and capable, but who has devoted his entire life quietly serving others. That man is Mitt Romney.
And that was Pam Finlayson, a friend of Mitt Romney, giving a very heartfelt speech there about how much Mitt and Ann Romney helped her family when her daughter was born prematurely. We've been hearing a lot about Mitt Romney's role in the Mormon Church, something we don't hear much of at all on the campaign trail. These were very touching stories, and we're going to the floor now in Tampa. Brian Naylor, I can only imagine how all this went over there in the audience.
It was people were quietly listening and applauding and wiping tears from their eyes when it was over. It was very, especially the last speaker, it was very moving, and it was, I think, some heartfelt emotion that we haven't seen very much of on the on the floor of this convention for the last couple of nights. I'm in the Kansas delegation right now with Delegate Clark Sanders from Salina, Kansas. Did I get that right?
Salina, Kansas, in the county of Saline, yes.
All right. You tell me that you describe yourself as an evangelical voter, and you came here supporting Rick Santorum.
I don't know that I'm necessarily an evangelical voter, but I did come here supporting Rick Santorum in our presidential caucus back in Kansas in March. I voted for Rick Santorum, was fully willing to vote for him here. But then, of course, this past Friday, he released us, and I voted for Mitt Romney.
And there has traditionally been some distrust, perhaps concern among Christian conservatives about the Mormon faith. Do you think people are putting that behind them and will be unified behind Mitt Romney?
Absolutely, I do. One of the biggest conservative voices in the country is Glenn Beck, and he's also a Mormon. So I think that's fine. I also think that it was a very, very strong message that he sent to conservatives with his choice of Paul Ryan to be vice president.
And you tell me you're a radio talk show host in Salina. What do you hear from folks who call into your show about Mitt Romney, about his faith?
The issue of his faith very seldom comes up. 53% of the people who voted in the caucus in Kansas voted for Rick Santorum, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Mitt Romney was necessarily our first choice in Kansas. But I'll tell you what we hear overwhelmingly is that Barack Obama has got to go.
And so do you think there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm for Mitt Romney, or is it mostly anti-Obama?
Well, it's a mix of both, but there will be enthusiasm for Romney because he is the one who will make sure that Barack Obama doesn't have a second term.
All right, Clark Sanders from Salina, Kansas, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Brian, appreciate your time.
What am I doing? And
Jennifer, back to you.
Okay, and we're going now to the podium. Bob White is Romney's campaign chairman and also a partner at Bain Capital, and he is at the podium now in Tampa.
He gave us a clarity of purpose. Our investors included pension funds, colleges, and charities with noble missions. We would invest wisely, and we would treat their money as carefully as we treated our own. We would support entrepreneurs, and we would invest in troubled situations. We would help them grow and try to make their companies better. And we would be held accountable for our performance. And when things went wrong, we would not blame others. And finally, he took decisive action. Mitt never hesitated. He made tough decisions, coalesced the team, and moved forward. Time and time again, I have seen this decisive leadership. When our old consulting firm was on the verge of collapse, they asked Mitt to come back and help. He answered the call. When many thought the situation was hopeless, Mitt was not deterred. I'll never forget when he said, "Bob, 1,000 employees and their family depend on us, and we cannot let them down." When the obstacles seemed insurmountable and others panicked, Mitt was the calm in the storm, and he never lost hope. His confidence gave us confidence. And that company not only survived, it thrived. And today, Bain & Company is recognized as one of the best places to work in America. I saw something similar when Mitt was asked to help save the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics. when we first realized the magnitude of the financial and management challenges, I was skeptical whether they could be saved. Mitt never doubted what could be done. He applied the same principles of leadership, and the Olympics became a story that made America proud. And when Mitt was elected governor of Massachusetts, he asked that I help him assemble a team that would serve the public trust and be loyal to the principles he held dear. That team accomplished so much because they got Republicans and Democrats to focus on the real problems and achieve real results. So why has Mitt taken so many challenges? It's because he runs towards problems, believes it's important to make a difference, and is determined to always give something back. In every pursuit, he feels a sense of responsibility and a commitment to serve. Even though we worked endless hours at Bain Capital, Mitt found time to serve his church and counsel people in need. And if someone needed help, Mitt was there. When our partner's daughter went missing in New York, Mitt said, "We can't just stand by and do nothing. We have to go find her." He closed down our entire office, took all of us to Boston, mobilized the search effort, and within days, we found her, and a mom and a dad and a daughter were reunited. Thank you. Mitt wanted us to give something back, too. He inspired the formation of Bain Capital Children's Charity. It not only donated money to worthy children's causes, it got Bain Capital employees actively involved in their communities. Go back and look at every pursuit in Mitt's life. Surrounding him are people who have worked with him over and over again. They trust him, they respect him, they want to be part of his team, and they want to be part of the change. And today, we need urgent change in Washington. And we need a proven leader with passion and compassion. I have seen Mitt Romney be that leader. He is the right man at the right time to be the next president of the United States. Thank you very much.
All right, and we just heard from Bob White, who is Romney's campaign chairman and worked with Mitt Romney at Bain Capital. He talked about what a wonderful colleague Mr. Romney was, how one time when a colleague's daughter went missing, he closed the office while everyone went and helped search for her. There is more coming up. Stay with us. You're listening to special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. This is NPR News.